Okay, well, thank you, and welcome everybody to this month's Member Solutions Teleconference. The topic today that we're talking about is organizing a world-class staff. My name is Melody Schumann. I will actually be the conductor of the teleconference today. The first 20 minutes is going to be on lecture. I'm going to review the report that was sent to you through your Member Solutions email account, or it was mailed to you. If you do not have that report, just let me know at the end of the teleconference or shoot me over an email, and I'll send that right out to you. It is a very comprehensive, detailed report this month. There's a lot to cover. Probably won't be able to cover every single part of it because the first 20 minutes is lecture, and then I'm going to open it up for questions and answers. So we're going to go ahead and begin. Again, this is the world-class staff teleconference. And the reason why I chose this teleconference for this month is because I'm starting to get a lot of inquiries from martial arts schools. Everybody is doing great. Everybody is becoming innovative. Everybody has really stepped into 2005 with an enthusiastic outlook. People are starting to get more and more professional in their martial arts businesses. With that said, one of the biggest areas of concern or one of the biggest challenges is staff training and staff development and staff management. So I put together this report because I wanted to kind of validate that it's okay to have three or four part-time instructors versus full-time instructors. I've made so many staff problems in the past, and I'm still making staff problems right now, and it's not necessarily because there's anything wrong with my staff. A lot of it just has to do with organization. In the past, where I've made problems is I basically had an enthusiastic black belt. Usually they're young adults or they're teenagers, and they're at that level where they want to participate in as much martial arts as they can. They want to be involved with your school. So I've hired them on as a staff member and kind of said, all right, well, I want you to get in here right when our school opens, which is 10 o'clock, or actually it's 9 o'clock now, Monday through Friday, 9 to 9 o'clock. Come in, and I'll just give you responsibility during the day, and then you're going to help out on the floor at night. And then, of course, if there were teenagers, I would say just come in right after school, and I expect you here every day, and I expect you to come in and help out around the school, and then when classes start, I expect you to be on the floor helping out. So that's all great. I had a lot of staff members who were eager and willing to come in every single day on those hours, the very long hours. A martial arts staff member's job is very taxing because there's so many things to do. But the problem I had was just staff management and delegation. I would just kind of expect my staff members to come in. Of course, every day one of my staff members had some kind of excuse on why they couldn't be in on time. Either they had a doctor's appointment or something happened and they just couldn't make it in. So with that said, my management was very hard because I would anticipate that one particular person who was going to come in today would take care of this duty, and if they called in, then I would have to put that responsibility on to somebody else's hands. And it's a lot of work. And, of course, again, like I said, I wasn't really delegating the right way. Everybody came in, and I just kind of told everybody, look, I want you to do this, I want you to do that, and I want you to take care of this. And when the phone rings, the first person who can answer it, that's great. Somebody walks in the door, the first person who's available, please talk to them. And then after you talk to them, try to do an intro lesson. And on and on and on. And I'm sure you're shaking your head saying, yep, I've been in that place before. But the purpose of this report is to kind of tell you that there's a lot of other options that you can do instead of just making everybody come in all day, every day. And that is just delegating specific tasks and duties. And most of you probably already do that as well, but I want to break it down a little bit more in detail and cover duties that I've used in my school that I've found to be very successful and go over some common questions like what kind of hours should they work, what kind of compensation should they get, and what kind of duties are they expected to follow. So the first thing, again, I wanted to point out is that you don't necessarily have to have full-time staff members. You can have part-time staff members. In my school right now, the way we're running is I have an office manager, and she is part-time. I have an office assistant, and she is part-time. I have a public relations director, and she is very part-time. She works very minimal hours. I myself act as the program director and also as the chief instructor. And then, I work full-time here. And then I have a head instructor, and he works full-time hours as well. So you notice that the only two full-time people are myself, who is the program director and, of course, the owner of the school, and my head instructor. My office manager does not have to be here full-time hours. My my office assistant doesn't have to be here full time, and neither does my public relations director. But they all get their work done, and they get it done in a timely manner, and they get it done actually very well. We're starting to see a lot of success here in the school, and I can tell you, knock on wood, the system is running very smoothly. So let's get down into it. Again, make sure that you're offering a variety of different positions, and every single position, they have specific duties that they are responsible for. And from those positions, pay them based on their performance in that particular area. Now, we're going to get into the pay at the end of the lecture, so let me just go over the common or the most effective martial arts positions that I find are working really well, not just in my school, but in other schools. So let's start with the off-deck positions. We have your office manager. An office manager is kind of like, in the dojo days, what you call the program director, but I like to call it an office manager now because an office manager is in charge of creating your marketing plan. Your office manager is also in charge of taking care of your billing and making sure all the billing is done. Your office manager is responsibility for really just holding everything together in the school, but that's not necessarily a full-time position if they're taking care of their tasks and you have other little duties being taken care of as well. So let's just go on to qualifications. I think an ideal office manager is somebody who has a college degree or experience in business, and I put here, there's a lot of stay-at-home moms, people who've gone to college, got their degree in marketing, worked for a firm, and then got pregnant, had a baby, took time off to raise a family, wants to get back into the workforce, but doesn't necessarily want to work a 9-to-5 job, and wants to have a job where they can have creative control, they can be innovative, they can be a little more independent. And being an office manager of a martial arts school is actually a very cool place. And I have helped tons of schools find ideal office managers that you wouldn't even expect. They don't have to have any martial arts experience at all. And that's the problem that I've made in the past, is I thought that every single employee needed to be in the martial arts because I wanted them to live the martial arts way of life. But sometimes it's better if they're not in the martial arts so that they don't have to focus on that end. All they focus on are the duties that I just specified when I first brought up the position. And then, of course, if the office manager was a stay-at-home mom, which, again, I'm not saying that there has to be, but I'm just bringing up where this can be an advantage, they're not necessarily looking to get back into work for pay. They're getting back into work for something to do, almost like a hobby or a way to be creative or apply their skills. So they don't necessarily have to get a large base salary. You can pay them a very small base salary and pay them a large amount of commissions based on enrollment, based on monthly actives, based on your monthly growth. Really, depending on how many duties you delegate would depend on what they get paid. And then, of course, you can make their hours flexible. If an office manager's duties are to coordinate your events and activities and put together your marketing campaign and work on your marketing campaign and also take care of your in-house billing and so forth, it's a lot of work, but it's not work that requires them to have to be here at 10 a.m. in the morning. They can get here, if you're medium-sized school, they can be there from 1 o'clock to 6 o'clock Monday through Thursday, give them Fridays off, and then have them come in on Saturdays. Now, the reason why I say 1 to 6 is because that gives them a couple of hours before class time starts to really work on their planning and make sure they have everything all set. And then I want them to be here when at least our children are coming into the school just to add to the professionalism. But you notice I have them go home at 6 because after 6 o'clock, really, your class sizes die down as far as parent management. Adults are a little bit more independent. They don't necessarily need people there to answer a lot of questions. Most of the time, adults can ask questions to the head instructor and get all their questions answered pretty conveniently. So that's why I put those suggested hours. But of course, when you start to get to be a big school and you're past 250 students, that's when you're going to want your office manager in here a little bit more, because most likely you're going to have a lot of daytime classes during the day. There's a lot more planning. There's a lot more structure. There's a lot more billing that needs to be managed. So that's when their hours start to pick up, and then, of course, their base salary would pick up as well. So let's go on to the next position is an office assistant. I have an office assistant right now who is fantastic. She just makes $10 per hour, and she only comes in very small hours. She comes in from 3 o'clock to 6 o'clock, Mondays, Tuesdays, Wednesdays, and Thursdays, and that's it. And basically what she is doing, she comes in here to help answer phones while we're busy, to talk with parents, to help make sure that they know about our summer camp and our pizza party and our child safety seminar. The office assistant is also there just to take care of mediocre jobs that the office manager doesn't necessarily need to tend to and reserve for the office assistant to take care of. Going on to the next one, the program director. Again, the program director and the office manager can probably be the same thing until your school grows, but a good program director should really just focus on enrollments in doing the pre-qualifications and the trial program. That's the position that I take here at my school. Every single student who comes in here for the trial program, I run all the evaluations. I go through the entire enrollment process all the way up to the very end where if I have to jump on to taking care of another new student, I can turn over the filling out the agreement to my office manager or my office assistant. But most of the time, I just take care of all the enrollments. And that's basically my primary duty, and then I jump on the training floor. But you can have a program director, an ideal program director, somebody with a good personality who has martial arts experience, who is very passionate about your school and passionate about what your school has to offer, but doesn't necessarily have the leadership skills to run a martial arts class. They're not really kind of one of the person who can do the entire deck management, but they can work well with people. Those make good program directors, the ones who are better one-on-one. So if you have that very intelligent, articulate teenage girl or boy who is a black belt in the martial arts, who really knows your school's operations really well, may make a good program director candidate. Or if you have an adult who is a black belt, who really likes the martial arts program, who either wants to do this just to help out your school or wants to do it on a part-time basis, doesn't want to worry about the stress of managing a deck, that is an ideal program director as well. You can just give them a regular base salary, and then you can give them a commission based on the enrollments that they have. Let me go on to the next one, the public relations director. This is something new, and a lot of people are starting to get PR directors. And if you have a PR director, you're probably shaking your head right now saying that that's probably one of the best positions I've added to my school. I have a PR director now as well, and she just comes in 2 times a week. She comes in on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and she talks with me for 2 hours each day, and we just brainstorm on ways to improve our image and to improve our position in the community and to get publicity. So she sets up all of our external activities. She set up our child safety seminar we had this past weekend. We actually had the lieutenant from the Pinellas County Sheriff's Department here. She had the Pinellas County Blood Drive here. She worked with Channel 9 News and St. Pete Times and Tampa Bay Times and all the newspapers, and she did all that from home. So she comes in, we talked about the child safety seminar, I gave her the dates and times and what I was going to do, she took that and she ran with it and she set up that whole event. And basically what I do is I just give her a small base salary per hour, but I also give her bonuses based on her results. So if we get published in a newspaper, I give her a $100 bonus. If we get a cover story in the newspaper, I give her $150. If we get in the media, we have the news here, I give her $200. And if I actually do a bigger section of the news where it's not just a small section but a section where I'm actually talking in a little more detail, I give her $250. She's fantastic because she's just a mother. She has another job, but she wanted to have a little bit more involvement with the school, and this job is perfect for her. So, again, if you don't have a PR director right now, seriously think about having that. That could be a great contribution to your school because it can really help alleviate some of the pressure that you have or your office manager has as far as that end of getting exposure, because that is a pretty hefty job. It's not a very hard job, but if you're doing so many tasks, that is one that doesn't necessarily seem so important, so it's always going to get pushed to the side. So by having a PR director, that PR director can tend to that particular area, and she'll take it very seriously, and it won't get put to the side. But I hope it makes sense on that. And if not, then we can talk about that position a little bit more in detail after I'm finished with the report. Going down, I also put down here a special events administrator. Again, this is a position where you have those black belts who are motivated, or you have those parents who are motivated, and they want to help out your school, and they want to work for you, but they definitely do not fit the right category for being a head instructor, and they don't fit the right category to actually do enrollments or work with the students because they're not really good with working with kids, but they're good at setting up things, put somebody in charge of your special events. Pay them a small day salary. Just have them work a couple hours a week. And basically, their job is to set up your ninja nights, your summer camps, your birthday pizza parties, more like the internal things. So let's not confuse your special events administrator and your public relations director. My PR director takes care of external events, and I want my special events administrator to take care of internal events. So if that makes sense to you, your special events administrator and PR director kind of have the same duties and job descriptions, but your PR director is more external, and your special events administrator is more internal. They set up the events, they do the flyers, they make sure that they have all the text written for the website, they make sure that they get posted on the website, they make sure the email announcements get set up, and so forth. It's not really a very hard job in itself, but again, if you are taking care of marketing and taking care of external events and internal events and trying to do the billing and trying to do the enrollments, you see how it all adds up. And that's why this, we put this report out, because it makes sense to split them all up. Let's go ahead and move on. A scholarship administrator, a lot of people are starting to do internal scholarship programs where you're doing fundraisers and all the money is being put in a bank account so that when students come in who can't afford it, you can actually allow them to take classes for free. But now you're saying that it's a scholarship. So having a scholarship administrator take care of those kind of events and take care of that particular area is very effective. I'm not going to get too much into this scholarship administrator in this phone call, but I did want to put it on there to let you know that that is a good position if you are a larger martial arts school, and there are people who would be more than willing to help out in that particular area. So now let's go on to the on-deck positions. Really, on on-deck positions, There's three main positions, and the one main position I didn't put on there because that's you, and you already know what your duties are, and that's the chief instructor. That's the person who is in charge of the classroom floor, in charge of the curriculum, in charge of when the testings are going to occur, and so forth. I'm the chief instructor here at this school, and I meet with my head instructor every day from 3 o'clock to 4 o'clock. And we go over every single class planner in the class, and we talk about what drills are working and what drills aren't working. And we talk about what curriculum the kids and the adults are picking up and what stuff they are picking up and what stuff is senseless and what stuff isn't senseless. And our entire meeting is all about quality and making sure that every single class is generating results. So going on to the next position is your head instructor. My head instructor is basically the backbone of the school as far as the debt goes. He's in charge of running every single class and managing every single class. He's in charge of delegating if you have your leadership team. He's in charge of basically anything that has to do with your students on the training deck. My head instructor, he actually kind of came in and I put him as a partner. He gets a base salary, or you can pay him hourly as suggested here, but he also gets paid. He gets a small commission on enrollments, he gets a commission on monthly actives, and he also gets a commission on monthly growth. So he knows that the harder that he works and the more results he has on that training deck, the more people are going to enroll. He knows the more results he has on the training deck, the more people are going to stay. So the active count is always going to get higher. And he also knows that his success based on enrollments and the students that we retain is directly reflected to the bottom line because they're going to buy more products, participate in more special events and activities, and they're going to upgrade and so forth. So he knows that his commission on the percent of growth is going to increase as well. So that is a very important position. The two main positions at your school should be your office manager and your head instructor. And then after that is the assistant instructors. I don't really need two head instructors. I want one head honcho besides me running my classes, and then I can have assistant instructors, and those are usually your teenagers or your adults who are black belts in your class, who you actually need to help out on the floor, but they just get paid a regular hourly salary, and they don't get any kind of commissions or anything like that, and their only duty is to come in here and help assist the head instructor on the classroom floor. Your assistant instructors do not have anything to do with enrollments, do not have anything to do with answering the phone, don't have anything to do with calling the newspaper and setting up a PR, none of that stuff. So you get my point. The assistant instructors basically just go on the floor. So think about your staff right now, and think about the people that you have. if you have somebody who is a pretty good instructor, at least you need them on the floor, but they're lousy on your marking, and they're lousy as far as enrollments and answering the phone and so forth, I would bump them down to being just an assistant instructor. And I would say, look, I know I put all these duties on you and I think I overwhelmed you, but I think really where I think you're the biggest asset is as an assistant instructor to myself or assistant instructor to my head instructor. So your only duty is to come in here every day when classes start and assist on the floor and help the students. And that's it. Of course, your pay is going to change, and it's just going to be an hourly pay, and you're not going to make any kind of commissions or anything like that. Now, from there, you can give the assistant instructor opportunities to move up. If they start showing a lot of interest in helping the office manager or helping with enrollments, then you can adjust their salary. But that's a really good place to start in your school. If you're a one-man show, really the most important positions that you want to have, or you want to have your head instructor and you want to have your assistant instructor, don't want their duties to have anything to do with the off-deck duties so that it's not overwhelming them. So now that I've talked about that, let me just talk about the staffing chart. It sounds overwhelming to have all these positions, and you may not be in a position to have all these different employees. But again, remember they're part-time, and again, remember that some of your employees can cross-train. So your office manager can also be the office assistant, of course. If you're not a very large school, then you don't really have a lot of paperwork and all those things that need to be done. If you're under 100 students, then you don't necessarily need an office assistant. You don't necessarily need a program director because your head instructor and the office manager should be able to book your introduction lessons at times when classes aren't going, and the head instructor does the initial evaluation or the intro lesson, and then your office manager takes over and does the enrollment process. As far as your PR director and your special events administrator, that is something that your office manager is going to have to take on. And if you are the office manager, you may want to think about bringing on that position next. If you are a one-man show, or not necessarily a one-man show, but if you are running all the off-deck stuff, I may make it a priority instead of getting an office manager or a program director, I may make it a priority to get a PR director who's in charge of setting up external events and internal events and helping marketing, just take that portion of the weight off of me so that I can focus on doing my billing, handling all the appointments, doing the trial lessons, and doing the enrollments with my head instructor. Scholarship administrator, most scholarship administrators are doing it just for free, so you can have one even if you only have 50 students.
So you get 35 to start.
Head instructor, again, you only really need one full-time head instructor until you get up to, I would say, 400-plus students, then you want a full-time head instructor. But as far as being a smaller school, you can even have part-time head instructors. As a matter of fact, my head instructor, he would be part-time if I didn't have classes spread out all day. But I do have yoga classes, kickboxing classes, adult taekwondo in the morning, and then I have a variety of classes in the evenings. So I have him on here full-time, and in between those gaps, that's when him and I talk about curriculum, and that's when I actually have him training on his personal development. So going on from there, and again, I know this is comprehensive, and I know listening to it, it still may be a little confusing, but hopefully it's all the pieces are starting to get put together. But going on there, now what you do is now that you have your positions and you visualize where you want to put each person in your school, because you may have them in the wrong position. You may have had who was an ideal assistant instructor as a program director position, or you may had an ideal assistant instructor, or vice versa. You may have had an assistant instructor who probably would make a better program director. Instead of them working on helping out in classes and managing classes, they may work better just one-on-one with all your new people. So now that you're thinking about that, then you can give them different stages and commissions based on their performance. So you look here, I have five different stages, and all of my employees start out as a freshman. So my head instructor right now is a freshman head instructor. My office manager is a freshman office manager. My PR director here at this school is a freshman, and the same thing with my office assistant. And the reason why I say freshman is because this is a brand new school, so they all start off at the beginning. Every single quarter, I evaluate each one of them on their particular duties and what they're doing, and if they are performing out of sight and they are just obviously got their job descriptions and duties down pat, I'm automatically going to promote them to sophomore. And then the next quarter, same thing. If they're highly productive, they'll go up to a junior and then to a senior. So depending on whether they're a freshman, a sophomore, a junior, a senior, depends on the actual commission rate that I'm going to get them. So if you look on my commission rate chart, I have five different stages. Stage one is disenrollments. That's usually for your office manager, your program director, possibly even your head instructor because they have a lot to do with the students enrolling. Stage two is monthly active. Usually your head instructor is the one who's getting commissions on your monthly active, but of course your office manager will also get commissions because they're going to kind of help on retention. Stage three is enrollments plus monthly active. You see stage four is percentage of the gross. And then stage five, which is like a partner, would get a percent of all that. So if you notice, although I have a freshman head instructor, he is considered a partner. He gets stage five, which is he gets a commission on enrollments, a commission on monthly active, and a percent of the gross. But if you notice, you could start off really low. So don't stress out saying, oh, my gosh, I got to give this, I got to pay my head instructor, and I got to pay my office manager, and I got to pay my program director on enrollments. I'm not going to make any money off of each enrollment. But you can start off small. See how I have $5 each, then you move them up to $10, then you move them up to $15. So I actually showed my employees, this is the chart. This is low commission right here to the left, and it goes all the way up to high commissions. So you can see, based on the size of our school, based on how much we bring in, based on your performance, you're going to consistently have raises if you are being productive. So at least they have a visual. At least they know I'm only getting $5 per enrollment right now. At least they know that's just a starting place. And the more productive they are, the more that they'll get. And the more students we get in, the more they get.
So putting
it all together really quickly, just a one quick conclusion, and I'm going to open up to questions. Hopefully this degree shows you that organization is the key. This particular report is for the ideal school who has everything thoroughly organized. So if you're not there, don't think you're doing anything wrong. This is just ideally where you want to be, and this is where you want to work up to. If you're really confused about your staff right now and you're worried about their performance in one area, this report should at least show you, look, maybe he's not meant to have those different tasks from off-deck and on-deck positions. It's very hard to manage both. It's almost impossible to manage both on a day-to-day, week-to-week, month-to-month, year-to-year basis. You know, a little bit here and there managing on and off-deck positions is easy, but when you're doing it consistently for a long time, eventually you will get burnt out. So definitely keep that in mind. And then, of course, a lot of these positions can be volunteer positions. Your PR director can be a volunteer. You can barter. Your scholarship administrator can be a volunteer. Your office assistant can be a volunteer, or you can barter. Even your assistant instructor can be a volunteer, or you can barter them with them as well. So try not to stress out. Try to look at this and try to figure out how you can delegate now your students and visualize where you can put certain people, and then start really low if you're on a tight budget on your commissions, but set goals for them to earn more as you become productive, which you will. Like I said, if you have a great team and everybody is assigned to a specific duty where nobody can blame the other person, you are going to inevitably be successful, or you're going to notice a lot of results from having a world-class staff working together. So with that said, let's go ahead and open it up to anybody who has any kind of questions or any kind of specific situations or scenarios in your school that you're having trouble with based on staff.
Yeah, I have a question.
Sure.
Can you hear me?
Yes, I can.
Okay. Basically, what I'm looking at, I think everything's really good. I also, the other equation I put in is I have an after-school pickup program. I'm trying to figure out how they would fit in as well with all the other stuff. So
gotcha.
I've kind of been doing some of the similar same things you have been doing, but that other dimension makes it a little more difficult.
Sure, sure.
My question is how do you, for instance, like my revenue may not, I think I'm lower than a lot of the national standards because of the area I'm in.
Okay.
So we charge an average of $79 a month for classes.
Okay.
And $49 a week for after school pickup, where you go into Orlando and it's $99 a week for the same service.
Right.
So I'm trying to figure out, based on that, what, I mean, are these all accurate figures for me, or do I need to, can you go into them for a little bit? If these are accurate figures for what I need to be doing.
Well, these are probably going to be the suggested salaries. You're definitely going to want to be a little bit lower because of your particular area. But another thing you want to think about is you definitely want to start to increase your prices as well. And it could be on an annual basis, even if it's just $5, that's going to make a significant difference.
Well, the big thing is that I've got a lot of people locked in the agreement, so I can't very well change their rate.
Gotcha. So you would basically be working on your new people.
Yeah, and then the other thing would be, secondly, is I can only do what the market bears. And
right.
So when I shop the competition to see what the prices are, a lot of these government-sponsored programs, these other different things that are going on, I keep driving the prices down lower, and then I'm losing bottom line with, you know, huge expense and increase in gas prices. And
I gotcha.
Figure out how to you know, work within the limits of my budget.
In your particular situation, since you are in a low demographical area, you're probably going to be looking more to have volunteers mm-hmm. in some of these areas than you are as actually paid staff, mm-hmm. and not even just volunteers, but even people who you can kind of barter with for mm-hmm. the actual classes.
Mm-hmm. And my other question is, how do you figure out, like, these different stages? I'm looking at that, like, enrollments. How do you chart that? You know, how do you keep track of these things? If they're doing enrollments or if they're doing monthly actives?
Well, you should have a daily report form where you're filling out every single penny that you're bringing in each day, and a stat sheet at the end of the week or at the end of the month, where you have how many enrollments you have for that particular month.
Mm-hmm.
If you don't have a stat sheet, then that's somewhere where you want to start. If you want to see my sample stat sheet,
yeah,
go ahead
great.
And email me. My email address is Melody, M-E-L-O-D-Y, at ppsbilling.com, and I will email you over all of our statistical forms, and that'll help you keep track of how many enrollments
you
have.
Yeah, I'm just trying to, I'd like to, if I could, you know, give some people some raises and stuff like that.
Yes.
And work on things, but I don't want to do it where I'm going into a negative cash flow to do that.
No, you definitely don't want to do that, and when I send you the stat sheets, if you want to try to fill it out the best you can and book a 20-minute consultation through Member Solutions with me, I'll look at your stats and I'll help you actually set it up for you.
Okay. Yeah, and I had another question here. I really can't remember the other question. I'm just trying to be able to figure out what I can afford, what I can't afford. You know, I've got several employees doing multiple funds.
Right.
And a lot of it's because, you know, I need more than a part-time job. I need a full-time job. So I give them a dual role.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Right.
But they can do that.
I didn't mean to cut you off. In your particular situation, why don't you go ahead and book a 20-minute consultation through Member Solutions, and I'll sit down with you privately, and you can give me a little bit more background and a little more detail, and I can help you out.
That'd be great.
More specific to your needs, okay?
That'd be great.
All right, very cool. Okay, so who else has any questions?
I have a question.
Yes.
This is David from Philadelphia.
Yes.
I'm having some problems with my program director, and one of the things I'm asking for, I mean, you laid out the pay structure and everything like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and that makes a lot of sense, but I've got a guy who's not even really pushing to produce. I don't feel like paying him hourly because he's not doing anything. What is the best way, really, to handle this type of person, and how do you keep them motivated? I mean, he's basically making commissions on, he's money motivated, but he's sitting back collecting money because people are walking in the door because they have a good reputation. He's not bringing people in.
Mm-hmm.
What is the best way to?
Is he an instructor as well?
He's an assistant instructor as well too. Yeah, he's a brown belt.
You know, he's a brown belt. See, that's the kind of person where if he's not really motivated to go out and help promote your schools, then I would just put him at a small hourly salary and just have him come in and assist on the floor. Do you have him in that particular position because he was at one point productive as far as enrollments and getting new students?
No, I didn't have anybody in that position, and as my school was growing, I needed somebody there.
Gotcha.
And so he didn't have a job, and he was a student, and I said, you know, he's a college student. I said, hey, I'm going to give you this opportunity if it doesn't work out in 4 weeks, you know, because he's looking for a job. I said, if it doesn't work out in 4 weeks, go look somewhere else. I'd give it a chance because you can make a lot of money.
Mm-hmm.
So he hustled at the beginning. He was signing people up. He was upgrading people.
Uh-huh.
Those days have come and gone, and right now he's just taking my money from me, and I'm ready to either kill him or fire him.
Well, you can't kill him. Again, he definitely does not fit the profile for a program director if he's not motivated. The only thing that you can do is you can have either weekly or daily. It sounds like even more daily meetings where you sit him down and you have to hold his hand and tell him everything that he needs to do. And you need
I've done
to
that. I gave,
very specific.
I gave him the paper. I gave him a paper with everything that I had it all professionally typed out. I went over everything with him. How he's supposed to clean, blah, blah. I'm doing all the work. Basically, he'll sit around and he'll upgrade students that are already here. You know, he'll renew them and collect a small commission. He's not running out to the stores in the mall and talking to them about having their employees come here.
Mm-hmm.
He's, you know, we have people on trial programs that don't show up, and like they might sign up and they don't come in, and he doesn't follow up on them. He doesn't know who they are, and then I find out later that they don't even come here anymore.
From my perspective, or in my situation, he would not be an ideal employee for my school. I really want people who want to be here, and I've made the mistake before of trying to create positions for people who want jobs, or hoping that they'll get better, or hoping something will happen and they'll stay motivated. But it doesn't work that way. And the martial arts industry is full of people who, when they first start out, they work really hard, but then they don't try. And in my particular school, he would have been fired yesterday. So keep that in mind. Really sit down and think about that. Read the report one more time. Find out if there's any way that or any position that he could fit in that you think he'll do well. And if he can't, then sit him down and say, look, I have this report right in front of me, and based on everything you're doing right now, you don't fit any one of these categories, so unfortunately you don't fit the profile of an employee here at my school.
Hey, Melody, can I interrupt here?
Sure.
This is Chuck Crone. You're from Philadelphia?
Yeah.
Okay, so you're in Pennsylvania. I own a construction company, has 34 employees. If you do fire him, you have to write him up saying exactly what you expected, what his job description is, and that he is not meeting the criteria. You have to do it at least three times. Otherwise, he can turn around and come back and sue you.
You know,
you
should pay
him for not working for you.
Well, it's just a matter of being patient and just giving him the evaluations, tell him what you expect of him, and then when he doesn't meet the next evaluation, reflect that on that evaluation. And then, you know, you can do that in a matter of a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and say, hey, listen, you know, I told you this is what I expected of you. You're not meeting standard, and I'm sorry, I'm going to let you go. I mean, you're welcome.
Brandon, that's definitely something I do, and thank you for telling me about that. What do you guys think about maybe taking away his base salary and saying, I'm going to give you a chance. I'm going to say, listen, you need to, like, give him a quarter. You need to have so many trials signed up, brought into the school just each week, and you will only work off a commission. I mean, is that a wrong thing to do?
I would give him a week, and I would say, this is what I expect you to do this week, and your job is not guaranteed, and it's on a week-to-week basis.
Okay, I'll do it.
That's honestly what I do. You know, honestly, guys, really, the reason why we're all on the phone today is because we've all been there where since we are martial artists, we have, like, most of us have goodness in our heart, and we want to try to help all people, including our staff, and sometimes we're really afraid to finally put our foot down, and we don't want to hurt the person's feelings, but that is really what affects our bottom line, and that's what affects our business. It's the staff. And the minute you start becoming firm with your staff, and not, you don't have to be a jerk. You don't have to be rude about it, obnoxious. You know, the report's right in front of you, and this is what it says about each employee. And I'm looking on this report, and I don't see anything on here that you fit the right description. So I can't have you as an employee, and I just blame it on the report. And not because I'm trying to pass the buck, but because I'm trying to follow standards that are going to help my business grow. And that's where you really have to sit down and talk to yourself and decide, are you in this for a professionally ran, martial arts driven business, or are you in this just to kind of get by and help other people get by?
Oh, hell no.
didn't sound like it, Dave. So, again, I think you really, really need to think about it, but I can tell you what's going to happen. You're going to sit him down, and you're going to say, you don't fit these descriptions. These are the things I want you to do, and he's either going to quit, or he's going to be motivated, and he's going to try really hard, and then you're going to fall into the same circle again somewhere down the road. So make sure that if you do keep him, because he is performing high now, make sure you have some kind of system, and a quarterly evaluation is the perfect thing. Have a quarterly evaluation every single quarter where you evaluate him again, and no job is guaranteed for him, It's based on his performance every single quarter. And that's how I look at all my employees, even my PR director and my office assistant. They're great people. Their mother's here. But I tell them it's on a quarterly basis. And you are a human contest member day, so there is that whole staff employment process, and it has all your quarterly evaluations.
Right.
I would stick with that, and I would start to use that.
Thank
are you doing staff meetings, too?
I'm sorry?
Are you doing staff meetings with him?
No, I don't do staff meetings.
Okay.
And I started doing little things there. It just wasn't going anywhere. And I have thousands of dollars of videos and DVDs, and I've said to him, I need you to look at this.
Well, you know what I found to do is that I do staff meetings. I require everybody that's a staff member to be there. I pay them for that time, and we go over those videos instead. Because otherwise, you tell them that some of them are very proactive, and they will, and others won't.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
So if you just make it a part of the staff meeting, they're required to be there. And then if they start saying, well, I don't really see why it's important for you to be in the staff meeting, then, well, obviously then you're not a valued member of the team, and you don't need to be on the team. Either you're on the bus or off the bus.
Yeah,
I'd be more of a boss is what I have to do now.
First of all, you need to lead by example and start to get really professional in everything that you do, and then say that I have certain standards that I want to follow starting immediately. And then if they don't follow along, you got to put your foot down and you got to be firm. If one of my staff members came in and said, what's the purpose of the staff meeting? They wouldn't have a job from that point on. And it sounds rude, but it's true. And my staff members know better than to come in here and say they don't want to be here. But I'm not saying it in a cocky way. The reason why they know better is because they know that they're going to learn from that staff meeting, and they know that everything that we learned in there is going to help make them better. And that's the leadership skills that you have to build personally. The first mistake you're doing is you're not having staff meetings. You have to have staff meetings, guys. Everybody should. If you can't get everybody there at the same time, have two staff meetings. And make sure that you're communicating with every single staff member on a weekly basis, or else they will drop the ball. That is just very common. Nobody's going to watch out for your business but yourself. So you have to have those staff meetings, and you have to evaluate them on a quarterly basis. Bottom line, if you're not, you're just basically tossing the dice in the air and hoping that they're going to get better, or hoping by osmosis some of the videos will land in their office and they're going to watch them. You know, I tell my staff that I'm a geek. I tell my staff that I'm a geek all the time because I like to read and I like to study and I like to get all these videos and all these manuals and read them. And a geek is a specific category. It's a specific profile. And the reason why I consider myself a geek is because not everybody just wants to pick up a video and read it, or not everybody's just going to do that on their own. So giving your staff member a video and hoping that they're going to watch it, it's not very common for somebody to say, okay, let me go home and watch it. So you've got to think about that, too. I think it's a good idea, what the other gentleman brought up, is watching them in your staff meetings and going over them, or your staff training program, either one.
Okay?
Hey, Melanie, this is Mark McCumber.
Hi, sir.
Hi. These numbers that you have that are the, you know, your freshmen, sophomore, seniors, is that somewhere that we can get, or should I email you for this?
You can email me for that.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And it's ppsbilling.com?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay, other questions?
Melody, Brent Cresci of the United Martial Arts Academies.
Yes, sir.
One, David, don't sweat it. I just had two program directors in the last year, same situation. One was an aspiring actor, so I sent him to California. It was right after I had a Melody Schumann teleconference about 2 months ago. I got off the phone, called them in the office, and said, here's what you should do. You're not happy. I'm not happy. God bless. Good luck. Here's a gift certificate.
Wow. Okay.
And, you know, he's in an HBO movie, so I wish him well.
Oh, very cool.
So that's great. Maybe he'll get me the Academy Award.
That's right.
I had a question, Melody. You mentioned the bias about us wanting to use only martial artists to work in our facilities,
mm-hmm.
which has been my prejudice for many years. And I'm wondering, as far as program director, using office manager term, do you feel that a program director does have to be a martial artist, or are you using anyone who's not a martial artist to do your program directing?
I have a non-martial artist office manager and a non-martial artist public relations director and a non-martial artist office assistant. Now, where the program director comes in with the martial arts, if they're not in martial arts, they don't do the trial part of the enrollment process,
mm-hmm.
but they can still do the enrollment part.
So you do have them sit down and do the money talking, for lack of a better term.
Yes. For example, I do all the trials with all the new students who come in, and I do the initial evaluation, fill out the form, explain to the parent where their strengths and weaknesses are, and tell them how the martial arts is going to help them. and then ask them if they're interested in, and I tell them what they qualify for. They either qualify to go right into the program, or they qualify for the trial program, or they qualify for private lessons. And whatever they qualify for, I ask them, is this something you're interested in? They say yes. I say, great, let me turn you over to my office manager, and she'll go over all the prices with you.
So a relay system, and then the non-martial artist does the facts and figures.
Right. So I don't like doing the facts and figures.
No, I don't either. I try to distance myself from that part of it.
Yeah, that way it's good to separate them.
It loses the genre of us being, you know, who we are in relation to students' eyes. But I didn't know with the non-martial artist, that was my worry, is bringing somebody in who has an experience getting a black belt or being a martial artist, but if they're just talking numbers, you're saying you've already qualified the student for the program. It's just a matter of the details.
Yes.
And taking the signing them up for the billing company or whatever.
You know what I found though sometimes is that you'll get someone, you'll seal the deal, and you'll hand it over to say an office assistant or a program director to finish the paperwork, and all of a sudden the person starts having second thoughts. And so I found that unless I just sit there and just do the whole thing with them, that sometimes you can blow the deal by handing it over to somebody else. You know, once it's completed,
yeah.
And
well, I haven't done my PD since 4 years. I moved to my new location, and but they've all been martial artists. And frankly, I don't have anybody right now on deck that's a student that I think is qualified or interested in the job.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
And so that's why I'm asking: can I just go to family members of students or outside to the to the newspaper and say, look, this is just a regular office job.
Yes.
Here's it's a sales job. Here's how it works. And train them myself.
Yes. If the person is not sharing the deal, then they if you did it the best intro lesson that you can, and really it's not very hard to do a very good trial lesson. If you're using a good evaluation form where you're evaluating their physical, intellectual, emotional, social abilities, and you're watching three different characteristics, and you're checking them on a scale of 1 to 5, they're strong here, they're weak here, so this is how we're going to help them with their strengths, and this is how we're going to help them with their weaknesses, and this is the program that they qualify for, they should basically be sold. If they say yes to you, but when they go over to the program director, if they're having second thoughts, it's either because they really can't afford it and they didn't want to tell you, or you didn't establish enough value. So, and so what you would want to do is you would want to take advantage of that opportunity and sit down and evaluate and go, why'd they have second thoughts? Well, I know that I found all their strengths, and she was very happy, and she agreed that was their strengths. She also agreed on the weaknesses. She agreed this program was good for her child. So I don't know what happened by the time she got to the program director. 9 times out of 10, it was really because they couldn't afford it.
Melanie, this is Mark McCumber again.
Yes.
I worked for Stephen Oliver for many years, guys, and we did it both ways. You know, if your instructor was out on the floor and he couldn't do the evaluation, you sat there and you did the evaluation and you did the program directing part two. I'm in a small school. I've got about 200 students. I do everything. I do the enrollment conference. I sit down and do the intro with them. I do it all. So I've done it both ways. It all is in your presentation. It's all in what you do with your qualification sheet and getting all the needs out of the parents and answering all those needs. If you hand it over to somebody else, all they're doing is closing it. There shouldn't be any questions to that.
Yes.
If I could just amplify on what Mark just said.
Okay.
I forget who it is that I heard saying this, but one thing that we all have to remember is that if our that we're the owners, and if employees were owners, then they'd be working for themselves instead of working for us.
Right.
You know? And so if there's just a basic difference of mindset, and we're never going to make them into owners, otherwise they'd be our competition.
You are exactly right, and let me add one more thing on that before we take some more questions. If you assign your employee to a specific duty, and it is their duty and their duty only, they're going to do 10 times better on that particular duty than if you kind of say, okay, I want everybody to kind of help contribute to this specific spot. And that's where I'm seeing my staff have success. Because John runs the floor, he's the head instructor, he takes that job very seriously. Because Jill is the office manager, and she is in charge of keeping those stacks and keeping them organized, and only her, she takes it very seriously. Because Peggy is my PR director, and she's just in charge of the PR, she takes it very seriously. I used to blend those duties together, and that's where I noticed that my employees were not giving it 100%. So the next step down from being an owner, like Dwight just brought up, is making that duty their own. Like it's their spot, it's their baby, it's their child, it's theirs and theirs only. And you'll notice that that's the best way to get them to perform higher. Okay, so other questions?
I just had a comment. Can y'all hear me?
Yes.
Okay, this is Jackie in Louisiana. I'm coming from a mortgage background.
Okay.
So I'm used to dealing with large sums of money.
Okay.
And the comment about, I've just found over the years I had to learn, when I was telling people it's going to cost you $4,000 to refinance your house and my processing fee is $300, you just look them in the eye and you say, it costs $300. And there's a tendency to go, oh my God, they're going to say that's too much money. They're going to say no, but most people just sign. So some of it's being able to instruct your staff to say, just look them in the eye. Don't be hesitant about what you're saying your prices are. Does that make sense?
Yes, it does. And I think it's because martial arts business is just so so new as compared to like mortgage businesses, and
mm-hmm.
we're so undertrained as compared to people in the mortgage industry that we have all those hesitations because we're not really sure. And it's just all of it is right. It's about confidence, mm-hmm. and it's about being strong, and it gets easier, right?
Oh, God, the first
few times you look them in the eye, it was very hard, but it gets very easy. And I think that that's where my employees look at me and they go, well, of course, Mrs. Schumann, you can sign any kind, you can steal any kind of deal because you're Melody Schumann. And I'm like, no, it's not just because I own the school, but it's because I've had the experience, and with mm-hmm. practice comes a little bit more experience.
Yeah, and I'm sure the general contractor has that same experience. You look them in the eye and say, this job's going to cost you, you want a new bathroom? It's going to cost you
$20,000. Right.
That's absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Think of your mechanic when he looks at you and tells you how much it's going to cost to do your brakes, and he don't care if you say no or not.
This is true.
Yes. Okay, any other questions that we have before we wrap up here today? Okay, no other questions. And if you do and you want to reserve those questions, remember that Number Solutions allows you a 20-minute consultation to come in and speak with me, and I can help you with your staff, I can help you with your specific questions and answers, or I can just listen to you, vent to me if you need to just, or validate some of the things that I'm having occur in my school as well. Just want to thank everybody for participating in this month's teleconference for Solutions. Thank you, Member Solutions, for allowing Schumann Concept members to actually sit in this month's teleconference. I hope you guys are finding them valuable. Please send me your feedback, good and bad. Let me know what you like, what you'd like to see more of. Please send in your request. This report, if you like this one. This one was because I had lots of people ask me this is what their next question was. I believe next month's consultation is going to be on 5 things that you should be doing in 2005. And it's going to be a great report. It's going to be detailed step by step. So I look forward to hopefully speaking with everybody next week. And I also look forward to hopefully talking to some of you new people who are on the teleconference today in your 20-minute consultations. So, again, thank you very much. Make sure you thank Member Solutions for providing the service to you. And you guys have a great, wonderful week. And please keep in touch.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Melody. You're awesome.
Thank you.